Greetings, everyone. My name is William Porter. Welcome to this edition of Storytelling Time. This podcast is sponsored by Every Dot Black Entrepreneurs Podcasting Network. Today's podcast is part two of a previously recorded interview that I had with Bishop Staccato Powell. So here's that interview. Today's show is part two of the program that we started last week with Bishop Staccato Powell. Welcome to the show today, Bishop Powell.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here again on Storytelling Time and have an opportunity to share with you and to be in your presence again. I thoroughly enjoy the relationship that we have fostered over the years.
Well, first of all, let me say that I've gotten so many positive comments about last week's show. So I'm looking forward to this show
today. God be the glory.
And let me say right here publicly that you're welcome back anytime to give your insights on any number of topics. But today I'd like to focus on you, your personal life, as well as your professional career. I'd like everyone to know, by the way, that you were my pastor for a number of years here in Raleigh at the Grace Church before you became bishop.
Yeah.
You've had an interesting history, and you talk quite a bit about your background when you were at Grace. So tell us about that. That is your family back in Hallsboro, North Carolina. And and please make sure you tell us exactly where Hallsboro is in North Carolina.
I knew that was coming. I like to say often that people who don't know the little small insignificant spots on the globe are geographically challenged. Doesn't take much to know the New Yorks of the world and the Los Angeles, but it's only those that have a high acumen and to know where Hallsboro is. Hallsboro is located just about 35 miles west of Wilmington in the southeastern part of the state of North Carolina, situated between Wilmington and Lumberton on 7476 that runs east and west across the state. And I grew up there as a youngster in a family of eight, my parents, and I had five siblings. My both parents and three of my siblings have now joined the ranks of immortal glory. But I have two brothers remaining, one in Greensboro, North Carolina, the other in Upper Marlboro, Maryland. And I was what we call in the South the knee baby of the group. There were four ahead of me, and then I have my younger brother who now lives, as I said, in Upper Marlboro, Maryland. But growing up in a very rural area, impoverished for the most part, but we didn't know it because everybody in and around the town was as impoverished as we are. We were, rather, but God brought us through and he kept us. And so I graduated from high school, matriculated to the University of North Carolina at Charlotte. God was very favorable, graduated in 2.5 years, and then went to divinity school at Duke Divinity and left there and went to law school at North Carolina Central in their evening program.
Well, that's good. I'm an alumnus of North Carolina Central as well, as you may or may not
know. I know. Yeah, I remember.
Now, tell us about the time when you first started your ministry at Grace. And, of course, this is when I first met you. When, as a matter of fact, I became a member when you were at Grace. But tell us about the time you were there and some of the successes that you may have had. And
yeah, Grace was a very interesting and transitional time in my ministry. I had gone to work for the National Council of Churches in New York City in 1999 or so, and worked for the council at a couple years as their deputy general secretary responsible for national ministries, which included the publication of the Uniform Lesson Series that 35 denominations pick up and base their Sunday school literature on the justice ministries, justice for women, environmental justice, racial justice. And then Bishop George Battle, who's the senior bishop of the AME Zion Church, called and asked if I would come to Raleigh to pastor Grace that was going through some turbulence. And so I was convinced that it was God's call for me at that season, though I had not pastored, had been at the council, but I accepted the invitation to come to Grace and arrived in the fourth Sunday in December of 03. So officially started around 04 and had a 12-year ministry there. Started with about 35 members, and when I left, we had 1,375 members of the church. And as you can attest to, we had two services, 8 and at 10:30, and the services were full every Sunday. Every Sunday, God gave us increase. It was the vision to transform the College Park community. And as you can attest to, that's happening even now. I mean, we purchased property. It was our vision to be the developers or co-developers. We didn't get to that extent, but the community is indeed being transformed. Things are happening. Homes are being built. Lives are being impacted. We had a daily nutritions ministry where we fed the community each 6 of the 7 days of the week. We had ministry in partnership with Habitat for Humanity, youth ministry. And so it was a very exciting and transformative time. But I felt the call on my life even then that God would use me at a different level and ultimately offer myself for the episcopacy.
I know at that time as well, you started a male's ministry.
Right. We had the male investment program.
Exactly.
And actually, the male investment program was a part of the Great Gathering. That was the platform that launched the male initiative. The Great Gathering was a meeting that took place in 2010 in Columbia, South Carolina. I think you may have attended that meeting. Yeah, I remember that. And it was a meeting between the Black Methodist bodies, the historic African Methodist churches in this country, namely the African Methodist Episcopal Church, the African Methodist Episcopal Zion Church, and the Christian Methodist Episcopal Church. And we gathered in South Carolina, in Columbia, and came out with a focus on what we could do to impact in a positive way the lives of males of color, to reduce the incarceration and recidivism rate, to increase the numbers that were graduating from high school and matriculating to institutions of higher learning. And that program was piloted at the Grace Church. And we met in our Saturday Academies, which is a concept started by the late Bishop Garnett Hennings at the St. Paul Church in St. Louis, St. Paul AME Church. And now many churches across the nation who are Methodists continue to use the male investment program.
Pastor, last week you gave an inspirational review of a recent sermon you gave at a local church on the subject of trust. How does the concept of trust, in your opinion, and of course used in a biblical sense, relates to your ascension to becoming a bishop?
It was the quintessential element, if you will. How do you get from a small, enigmatic hamlet and village in rural North Carolina, born the 5th of 6 children to a domestic worker and a civil servant worker, to rise to become the 102nd bishop in the line of succession in a church that has been around for more than 220 years. And the simple answer is you trust God. You trust God in good times and bad times. You trust him when you're involved in an automobile accident at 16 years old that was nearly fatal, where you could have been decapitated. You trust God when you're an infant and you don't even know that you're in the world, and mice bites you and cuts a main artery, and you almost bleed to death, and your mother miraculously wakes up in the middle of the night and carries you to the hospital. How do you do that when your oldest brother accidentally hits you in the back of the head with a yard rake and there are no 911 services and your family doesn't have an automobile and he picks you up and runs through the path to the local used car dealer and gets you to the hospital just before you collapse and pass out? All of that's trusting God. When you go through situations academically and you keep pressing and you keep pushing and then you have failed marriages, how do you do that? God does that, and it's through trusting him. And to become a bishop in the AME Zion Church, you know, Dr. Porter, you have to join a field of others who are candidating. When I was elected in 2016 in Greensboro, North Carolina, there were probably 18 to 20 people running as well. And my trust in God allowed me, and not that the others didn't, but God favored me, and I was elected the first in a class of four. So, and I became the prefector of the class. I was assigned to the Western Episcopal District, which is comprised of the states of California, Oregon, Washington, Alaska, Colorado, and Arizona. So from the sunny shores of San Diego, California, to the iconic snow-capped mountains of Alaska, over to the mountain peaks of Denver, Colorado.
Now, of course, you mentioned that particular district, but as we may have mentioned earlier, I forget whether we did mention it, but you've been all over the world spreading the gospel and going to meetings affiliated with the Methodist Church.
Yep.
Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. God has blessed me, and I trust him to continue to do more, to sit on the governing board of the World Council of Churches and the National Council of Churches. At the World Council, where I'm a member of the Central Committee, I also sit on the Planning Committee for the Assembly that will take place in 2021 in Karlsruhe, Germany. We most recently met in Cyprus to formulate plans and come up with the theme for that. I've been on six of the seven continents. I'm currently planting the flag of the AME Zion Church in East Africa, in the countries of Uganda, Kenya, Tanzania, as they say, we say Tanzania, they say Tanzania, Rwanda, Burundi, and South Sudan. I preached in West Africa, in Ghana, in Southern Africa, in South Africa, in Zimbabwe, been to Malawi. So God has really blessed me. The World Council is located in Geneva, Switzerland, in Europe. So I've been to Paris. I've been to, the cities in France and in England. And so I travel extensively. I headed back to Kenya in a few weeks. And so God has been very faithful. So why wouldn't I trust him? I've seen his miraculous moves and experienced them. And I still expect the miraculous from God even now.
Earlier you mentioned, Bishop, that you were in a car accident, and actually one of the stories in my most recent book, Miracles in the Lives of Ordinary People, one of the short stories is based on that particular experience, and you'll find that out once
Who knew?
Once you
I think
that.
Perhaps I should garner some of the royalties from the book. No, just kidding. But that's
you help
it.
Market
well,
accident.
Thank you. Oh, I can happen to be delighted to do that. Yeah, that's wonderful. And I think it's stories like that and people like you have been the catalytic force to help me to get to where I am now. I will always remember your late wife who came to grace and your daughters, Panya and Pam, who also were very active, and the role that you played in the Grace Church and having me on this show. I think Annie Vaughn, your current wife, and having me on this show, I think is just a tremendous plug for where I am and what I'm doing.
Well, great. That's very touching. Very touching.
It's very true.
Okay, well, one final question, Bishop, is this. And I'd like for you to elaborate on this for a little bit. And that is, what do you see as the future of the church? And what, in your opinion, is our role as believers in the church as we move forward into the future?
Yeah, I think that's a great question, particularly in light of the fact that many people are predicting the demise of the church. And I wouldn't try to minimize that, because it is true that the church is in a downward spiral in terms of numbers. The Pew Foundation most recently did a study, and they have concluded that the greatest and the largest growing sector of society is who they describe as the nones, N-O-N-E-S. And those are persons who don't ascribe or affiliate with any faith tradition, whether it's Christianity or Islam or Buddhist, none. They just don't affiliate. But I'm confident that the church is perhaps poised for its greatest season if we would take advantage of the things that are occurring in society. People still need what only the church can provide. And I think the call is to return to the first century church, God's original intent, where lives are being impacted in a real way. I have a tenet that I talk about in the New Church Believers, where we are transparent with our issues, transformative in our impact, and transitional in our intent. People can still be healed from whatever illnesses that they may be impacted by. Relationships can still be enhanced as a result of what the church brings. And I would prophesy that the church will again experience a resurgence if we can just stop trying to assimilate in this contemporary culture and be uniquely who we are called to be as believers.
And I think one of the things that you're saying is that the church can act as a vehicle of service.
Most definitely.
And I'm thinking about the food ministry.
Food ministry.
That reached its height at in your administration, and we're continuing to do that, as a matter
wonderful,
of fact.
Wonderful.
So that's very, very significant.
And I would also add what I'm touting in the Western Episcopal District, because we have the good fortune of serving in some of the major cities in this nation. We have the city of Los Angeles, the city of San Diego, San Francisco, Oakland, San Jose throughout California. We have the cities of Seattle and Portland and Anchorage and Denver. We have the city of Phoenix, Arizona, the fifth largest city in the nation. And I'm telling them that we can repurpose our churches that are in the inner cities. And you see this as an example of what I'm talking about, the Riverside Baptist Church in Washington, D.C., that sits right across the street from the Wharf, where we take buildings that are in decline and decay, memberships that are shrinking, and begin to position them in such a way that they can offer the services that you just mentioned, nutritional services, services of child care and educational enhancement, and adequate housing. Some of the land that we are occupying now, and our churches may not be utilizing it to the fullest as worship spaces, we can convert those into housing that people can afford and inhabit. And they can also worship in the sacred space that we've set aside. So when we begin to revision what ministry looks like, I think the opportunities are extraordinary. And I'm hopeful that God's word, and I'm sure it will, that his church will last, and not just last in a sustaining way, but a thriving way.
Well, thank you so much, Bishop, for being with us. And remember, you're welcome anytime in front of these microphones and to address our audience. You've been very inspiring, and that's what this program is all about.
Well, I thank God for you and for the vision. I thank God for Jonah and this storytelling time. And my prayer is that this ministry will be impactful and touch lives in an exponential fashion. And I'm confident that it will. People need more storytelling time. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you very much. And before we leave, though, do you have contact information that you might would like to leave for our listening audience?
I sure do. One of the things that I would like for them to take full advantage of is to go to the Western Episcopal District's website, and they can just put in Western Episcopal District and it will come up. But more importantly, each morning at 7 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, and also 7 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, which is 10 a.m. on the East Coast, we have a prayer call. And the number for the prayer call is 712-775-8901. And the access code is 621-775. And they can call in and listen in to prayer. We convene every morning, as I said, at 7 a.m. Eastern Time and 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. And they can call in, and if they have a prayer request, they can send it to NCB Prayer Request. One request, ncbprayerrequest@gmail.com. And we'll be delighted to lift them up in their cares and concerns. And I can assure them that God will move in a mysterious way his wonders to perform. And again, thank you so much, Dr. Porter. And if they need to contact me directly, they can send me an email and I'd be happy to respond. And they can send it to staccato at staccato. Numeral 4, Zion, Z-I-O-N, at mail.com.
Well, that's our show for today. Again, I'd like to recognize Every Dot Black Entrepreneurs Podcasting Network, the sponsor of this show. And thank you, our listening audience, for being with us. I'd like to close the show today by giving you some encouragement. And that is, regardless of what you may be going through, there's always more good things coming your way. Have a nice day, and we'll see you next time.